Anyway, I'd like to introduce our speaker. Mike Kay set us up with a local speaker, and I heard he's really good. He's from Bakersfield, California, and he's got a hell of a pitch for us, so I hope you all listen. I hope you get something out of it. I'd like to introduce Tony O.
Hi, everybody. My name's Tony. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Mike for asking me to come up here. I'd like to apologize right now in case it doesn't go good. I'd like to thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for my God, because that's the way it happened. I'm glad to be an alcoholic. I'd hate to be this messed up for no reason. You know, my sobriety date is October the 12th, 1975, and I'm grateful for that. You know, I grew up in Bakersfield. I wasn't born in Bakersfield, but I might as well have been. I came out here when I was 1 month old, so, you know. I like Bakersfield. I like the heat. And I hate the cold, so I'm perfect. It's perfect for me. I started drinking when I was about 13. I grew up in an alcoholic family. My dad was an alcoholic, and he was a bad alcoholic. My sister, my mom, she had a lot of relatives in Bakersfield, and they all drank, and so they would have big parties and stuff. My grandfather, he had two wives. He had 13 kids by one wife and 13 by another wife, you know, and he would take them out on the fields and work them. You know, they was like his crew, you know, and so they had a lot of anger, you know, and when they were drinking, it'd come out, you know. When I was 13, they had a big party there at the house next door. My aunt lived next door, and they had a big party. And they had us kids, we would be like waiters and stuff. We'd get them another beer or whatever, you know. And a lot of them would leave a little bit in each glass and stuff. So we got to pour it all in one glass, no matter what it was. And we'd drink it. So I got drunk, and I took off. I walked about 3 miles to a local theater. Went into the theater and threw up on their floor. Went across the street to a drive-in theater and a hamburger joint and passed out in the doorway. Woke up, the highway patrol picked me up and took me to juvenile hall. And that was my first drinking. And I didn't drink right away afterwards, but when I got into when I could, the people I ran around with drank. You know, they were older boys and stuff, and we, as kids, we kind of ran the streets because my dad was working, my mom was working, so we kind of just did whatever we wanted. And these guys I hung around with, you know, they had a lot more guts than I did. I was kind of a chicken little kid, you know, wimp, you know, but I'd do what they did, I didn't want them to think I was, didn't have any courage or anything, which, you know, I didn't. And, when they got drunk, I got drunk, and it went from there, you know. And I didn't do well I did all right in up until junior high, and then when I went to high school, I didn't do very well because in those days they didn't have a lot of special classes for readers and stuff like that, and I couldn't read very well, you know. And so when they got ready to have a test, I wouldn't go that day, you know, because I didn't know what the hell was going on, you know. So when I was in my junior year, they asked me to either go into service or go to juvenile hall, or go to juvenile, you know, because they kicked me out because I wouldn't go. And I'd had problems with a girlfriend that I was going with. You know, she broke up with me, and you know, I thought, you know, I'll get her back. You know, what I'll do is, you know, because I was watching at home, I was watching the sands of Iwo Jima, you know, and I was watching the Marines and stuff, and I thought, well, I'll become a Marine, you know, and then she'll want me back, you know, because the uniform and all that, you know. So I joined the Marine Corps, and a lot of stuff in that movie was not at the Marine Corps depot, you know. I found out it wasn't quite that way when I got down there. You know, in fact, I'd never been yelled at that much in my life, you know. It seemed like they yelled for 3 months. I didn't know how they could do that. How anybody could yell that much all the time, you know. And of course, when I got through, I was a Marine, you know, and so I was a killer, you know. So, you know, they teach you a lot of stuff in the Marine Corps, you know, hand-to-hand combat, stuff like that, you know. And I noticed that, you know, I lived in a fantasy world my whole life when I grew up, because I grew up by myself, basically. I had two sisters, but I stayed away from them because they'd always beat me up and stuff, you know. And so, you know, they said that if you take your finger and you stick it in the side of a guy's eye, you can pop that eyeball out, you know. And I thought that was pretty cool, you know. So I got in a fight with this guy in the Marine Corps, and I kind of stuck my finger in his eye, you know, and I learned that you need to really want to pop that eye out, you know, if you're going to try that. You know, because all I did was piss him off, you know. And, you know, he beat the shit out of me, you know. And to this day, I've never stuck my finger in anybody's eye, you know. I found that wasn't for me, you know. And went through the Marine Corps, and I didn't do well because I was a drunk, you know, and I had a mouth. So I'd get drunk, and then I'd want to tell them how to run shit, you know. And they didn't like that at all, you know. And I always, you know, I was close enough at Camp Pendleton that we could hitchhike up to Bakersfield and do the weekend. But I always seemed to need an extra day, you know. I always wanted to come back on Tuesday instead of, you know, Sunday night. And so I was always in trouble. You know, I spent 45 months in grade as a PFC, you know. And I couldn't figure that out. I thought, you know, they don't like me. Well, no, I mean, I don't know why, you know. You get drunk, you won't show up. You know, I went to a reunion a few years ago, and there was a lieutenant there, and he said, "I remember you, you're UA." And I said, "Hey, you smart ass, you know. That's unauthorized absence, UA, you know." Anyway, I got through it. We went over to Okinawa on our overseas tour, and we were like a floating battalion, and ended up they decided that we were going to go to Vietnam. And so on April the 10th, my 19th birthday, we landed in Vietnam. And we went over the side just like they did in that movie. And I thought, holy Christ, you know, I didn't sign up for this. I signed up for the uniform, you know. And but it was, you know, we didn't, you know, it wasn't that bad like it was in the movie. We walked about a mile, and then they put us on trucks. And I thought, wow, this is great. You know, they're going to take us in trucks to where we got to go. And they took us about a mile, and then they said, "You're going up that hill." And it took us 5 hours to get up that hill. And I thought, and this is my birthday, you know, I can't. So I kind of passed out a little bit, you know, and the other guys carried all my stuff up the hill. I thought that was pretty nice of them, you know. Anyway, I got through it without getting hurt, and I came back, and they wanted to make me a cook. And I was a machine gunner in Vietnam. I told him, I don't know anything about cooking. He said, well, if you go back to Vietnam, you don't have to be a cook. And I thought, I love cooking, you know. And so I ain't going back over there. Why would I go back over there? You know, that doesn't even make sense. You know, I got away without getting, you know, killed. And so I got, you know, I did that, and then I got out of the Marine Corps. And in the meantime, I found this other love of my life, you know. And so she told me if I find get us an apartment, she'd marry me. So I found an apartment real easy, you know. Back in those days, it was like $75 a month, you know. And so, you know, it was just, you know, it was romance made in heaven, you know. And I found out one thing about romance, that if you're married, don't ever say, you know, don't ever tell your wife when she's got food on the table, what's this shit, you know. Because I came home one time and she had some stuff on the table, and I just commented, like, what's this shit? And she said, that shit's in the garbage. And she threw it in the garbage, and I thought, my God, I married a nutcase, you know. So I went out and got drunk. You know, and I come home, I was all sad and stuff. I'm sorry, you know. So I was sorry most of the time in my whole life, you know. Anyway, you know, I couldn't stay home. My whole life, when I was growing up, I was never home. So I had to go. I could not stay home. And that really took its toll on the marriage. So anyway, in October of 1975, I think she hit her bottom, you know. Because I came home and everything I owned was on the front porch. You know, I can't go anywhere. Where can I go? We were living in her mom's house, you know. I didn't have a car. She had a car. The fender was tied on with a rope because I knocked it off in the canyon, you know. So I didn't have a car. I didn't have nothing. So I told her, you know, call Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And she said, will you call Alcoholics Anonymous? Little challenge there. I'll call them. So it was like 6 in the morning. I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, well, we'll send somebody out. So from 6 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, I'm waiting. By then, I'm still here. I can't, you know, she hadn't got me out yet. And I'm hoping he don't show up, you know, because maybe I called too soon, you know. And about 2 in the afternoon, here he comes. And I thought, holy Christ. You had yellow pants on, a yellow shirt, white belt, and a white hat and white shoes. He'd been out playing golf. I didn't hang around with people that dressed like that, you know. And I thought, Jesus Christ, get him in the house before the neighbors see him, you know. So I got him in the house, you know, and he gave me this speech about, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what it was. I don't remember. And he said, go over to Oildale and see Ed R., and he will take care of you. And I want you to call me every day. Every day, you know. So he said, go over to Oildale for 30 days, you know. So I went. And the reason I went, I didn't want him coming back to my house, you know. Because I knew if I didn't go, he'd come back, you know. And I couldn't have him hanging around, you know, because I had an image to keep up. You know, I had mowed the yard in 6 months. I had that car outside with a vent fender tied on but with a rope. And I had an image. You know, I don't know what that was, but it was my image, you know. And so I went over to Oildale and I seen Ed R. and he said, sit down. And I thought, well, how's that taking care of me? Sit down, that's it? You know? You don't want to congratulate me for coming in or any of that stuff? You know? And so I sat down and I sat in the wrong place. I sat right in front. You don't want to, if you're new, don't sit in front because everybody can see you, you know, and then there's people behind you, they can see the back of your head, and I don't want nobody seeing the back of my head, you know. Because I was, you know, I was super self-centered. You know, I knew everybody who was looking at me. I could tell you, I was so self-centered, I could tell you what I looked like from any angle. If I had a hole in the back of my socks, I could see it without even looking, you know. And so I went, and I kept going. I'd go home, and I'd try to tell the wife about AA, you know, and she didn't want to hear it. She didn't. In fact, you know, I figured, you know, 90 days, she'll get over it. And then I can get out of there, you know. And she didn't speak to me for a year. I mean, I was stuck in that house without, you know, and she didn't speak to me for a year, so I'm stuck in AA for a year, you know. And after a year, I thought, I ain't giving up a year. I'll give up 2 weeks, but I ain't giving up a year. You know, I get rid of her before I get rid of that year, you know, and thank God I thought that, you know, because I stayed. And, you know, I could see, you know, I seen those steps and stuff on the wall, and I thought, well, that's, you know, I'm not worried about those because I'm not going to take them. You know, I'm not going to tell anybody that I'm not going to take them, but I'm just going to say, yes, they're good for you, you know. Not me, but they're good for you, you know. And, you know, if you stay sober and you don't drink and you don't take the steps, you're going to be a nutcase. And so I was a nutcase for a while, you know, and thank God finally I took them, you know. I got involved in AA. I loved AA. I fell in love with AA. I love the AA program. I love the AA people. I love everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. You know, I didn't do everything right, and I did a lot of things wrong, but I didn't have to drink. You know, I remember I had about 3 years sober, and I decided, you know, I was reading the paper, and it says coaches wanted, you know, soccer coaches. And so I thought, you know, now it's time to do something for the kids, you know. You know, I've neglected them all this time, so I got a hold of another alcoholic that probably as crazy as I was, and we got a team, you know. And I thought, well, you know, we got God on our side. We're not drinking. We'll go to the top. We're going to take the whole works, you know. We didn't win a game for 3 years. I mean, that was the longest 3 years I have ever done. I would come off the field and I would have to take a nap because I was so depressed I wanted to commit suicide, you know. You know, and the kids would come up and say, did we win? I think, hell no, you didn't win. You didn't even play, for Christ's sakes, you know. And the moms would say, well, how come you're not playing little Johnny? And I, you know, you can't tell him, well, because he's a piece of shit. That's why I can't, you know, I can't say that. I said, you know, I'm saving him for the big push, you know. There was no big push. We were always already beaten so bad that, you know, one goal wouldn't have made nothing, you know. And, you know, so I just, I mean, I got obsessed with that. So I'd go home, I'd stay up all night thinking about strategy and stuff, you know. And, you know, I had to go to my meetings to, you know, get squared away, you know. And we'd try it again, we'd lose. We'd try it again, we'd lose. So then, you know, you get two alcoholics together and they both know more than the other one. So we split up. We got our own teams. We'll do it. Now that was probably the problem. You know, he was holding me back, you know. So, you know, I thought one time, I thought, you know what? I think I'm just, this year we're just going to have fun. You know, and we won everything. You know, I thought, whoa, so much for fun, you know. And I didn't know it was for fun, you know. And So I was out at Oildale at a meeting, and this guy named Leroy Mooney was bugging me. He says, you know, you want to take a team to France? Oh, yeah, I do. I've always wanted to take a team to France. Ever since I was born, I wanted to take a team to France, you know. So he wouldn't shut up. So finally, I contacted ASO, and I asked them about it. And they said, okay. So we raised $60,000 and took 20 kids, 10 from the east side and 10 from the west side, and we went to France. And we played in an international tournament, and we took second place. You know, and that's, if I was drinking, they wouldn't let me on the plane, you know. In fact, Leroy got to over to, he had to pay his own way. He thought he was going to get a free trip. And he paid his own way. And evidently, over in France, he wasn't an alcoholic. Because he got so drunk and embarrassed us so bad that me and my buddy, we had our coats over our head on the bus one night because he was so drunk going up. You know, it was embarrassing, you know. Payback. That's kind of payback, you know. You get. Anyway, you know, I did a little bit of H&I, you know. People said if you don't do H&I, you're not doing AA right. So I got involved in H&I, and I was the director of H&I. And they wanted me to go to the prison. You know, I thought, man, I don't want to go to the prison. What if they, you know, what if they riot, for Christ's sake? You know, I don't want to be a prisoner up there, you know. I mean, didn't get sober to go up there and be a prisoner. So I went anyway. And after that, I decided my panel is going to be detox in Bakersfield. And so they didn't want me to be the director very long after that, you know, because I wasn't a very good director, you know, because I didn't want to go to the prison, you know. And, you know, I really respect those people that can do that, you know. It takes a special person to do that, you know, and they're needed. I got to thinking that, yeah, I did that soccer a long time. You know, I did high school and did some JVs and some, you know, and the referees and the parents, they just burn you out. The kids are fine, but the parents burn you out. Some of them, not all of them. And I thought, well, you know, it's time for I do a little bit something for myself, you know. So me and my last sponsor and a guy named Grayson, we were sitting around the club one day and we said, we ought to join karate. You know, now I'm 45 years old, you know. And so we thought, all right, we'll join karate, you know, because we had a buddy that was doing it. And you know, we were going to meet up there at a certain time. So I went up there. And they weren't there. You know, I thought, God, how could they do this to me? You know, and I didn't want to hurt the guy's feelings, so I joined. And I never paid so much to get beat up in my life. You know what I mean? You pay money and people beat on you. You know? And I got it. It was like a drinking. I liked it. You know, I thought, yeah. Now I'm a warrior. You know, now I don't have to. They're not going to kick sand in my face, you know. And so I stayed with it, and I got to going every day, you know. And you know, I just didn't seem to be as high and as good as some of the other guys, you know. So I thought, you know what, I need a specialty. So I got into weapons. And the weapons I liked were the nunchucks. You know, because I seen Bruce Lee do all that stuff with those nunchucks. So I got to messing with those nunchucks, and I had a theory that if you use the rubber ones, you're never going to get good because you're not going to be careful. So I got the wooden ones. And I swear to God, I beat myself to death with those things. You know, I was up the dojo. I made sure nobody was there because I don't want them to see, you know, how good I was getting, you know. And so I hit myself in the nose, and I thought, man, you know, stop. And I didn't stop, and I kept hitting myself, and I said, stop, man, for Christ's sake, stop. My nose is, you know, bleeding and everything. And so I thought, well, yeah, I need to practice more, you know, slowly. And so I'm at home. I got in the garage. I got this mirror up. Now, remember, I'm 50 years old now. You know, I'm thinking, how long you been sober? How old are you doing this stuff? You know, this is when kids should be doing this, not you. And so I kept it low key. You know, I didn't want anybody to see how stupid I was, you know. Because Alcoholics Anonymous will fix a lot of things, but it won't fix stupid, you know. And so I got this mirror up in my garage so I could see, you know, how good I am. And man, I caught the top of this board and it came back and split my head open here, you know. And I'm out in the garage and I'm yelling for my wife, I need help out here, I need help out here. And she didn't even care, you know what I mean? She didn't come out, nothing, you know. And so I retired the nunchucks. I still got them, but they're hidden away, you know. Every now and then I'll think, you know what? And I think, no, I don't know what, and no, you know. And my head wants to go, it wants to grab them. But I won't let it. See, I've got a little bit more control today, you know, than I did back then, you know. So, you know, me and the first wife, we couldn't get along, you know. I would just, she could, you know, it was just too damaged. Our marriage was just too damaged. And it says that in the big book. And, you know, I don't blame her at all. It, you know, it's me. It was me. I just, you know, I couldn't stay home. I, you know. And so we split up. And one of the reasons we split up is one day in Oildale, I met this gal, you know, named Valerie. And fell in love. So she moved back to Missouri. And so I told my wife, I'm gonna pack everything up and I'm gonna go to Missouri and we're gonna start our life over. You know, that's what I told her, you know. And this is not program stuff, you know. Don't do this if you're trying to stay sober. You know, and so I went back there. And she had a boyfriend. You know, I should have called her, I guess. You know, So I had to call my wife to have her send me some money to come back on. And that was the longest drive of my life, you know. And I got to Tehachapi, and I ran out of gas. So I had to call her again to bring me some gas money up there. And I'd always said when I got sober that no matter what you get yourself into, no matter how bad it is, no matter what it is, you will not run. I wanted to run bad. And I stuck it out. And, you know, she'd look at me sometimes at the table and she says, how does Valerie comb her hair? You know, I could, you know, can't say nothing, you know, I mean, you're guilty, you know. I told my sponsor one time, I feel guilty. And he says, because you are, you know. I thought, well, that's a hell of a thing to say to somebody new, you know. Anyway, we split up and we made amends to each other and everything. And I got a new wife, you know. And, you know, we got married, went to Vegas. It was a Vegas roundup over there. And we got married, and we were going good for a while. Then we started having problems and stuff. And, I still had a hard time staying home. I went to a lot of meetings. I didn't want to be home. And at the time, we bought a new house, and So her kids, you know, they wanted to build a pool in the backyard, so because there wasn't no grass or nothing back there. So they dug this big old hole without me knowing it, and they were going to put this doughboy in the ground. And so I fought over it, and I lost. They put it in the ground, and we had it for quite a few years, and it was just green. I mean, there was stuff growing in that thing, you know. And then she had this cat, and the wind blew the cat into the pool. And so then I got my way, you know. Get rid of that pool. Yeah. So I got rid of the pool, but then I got this big hole in my backyard. And what do I do? You know, so at the time when I had the pool, I decided to put rock all the way around to have a rock garden, you know, because I'd been working for Banks Pest Control, and I went to a lot of people's yard, and I seen it was beautiful. So I decided to put rock around it, and, you know, I didn't have any rock, so I had to go to the river and stuff, and that took forever to bring rocks home in a little van, you know. And so I thought, well, I'll buy some. And at the time, I didn't know what 3 tons of rock looked like. So I bought 3 tons of rock. I came home. It was in my driveway. And I thought, holy shit. You know, I got to move all that. You know, so I started moving all that rock. Took me forever. I moved it back there. And a lady came down from up the street. She says, what did you do with all that rock? And I said, well, I made a rock garden. And so she said, can I see it? And I said, yeah, you can see it. So took it back. And she said, man, that's a masterpiece. And I thought, yeah, it's a goddamn masterpiece. You know, and problem is my dogs didn't know it was a masterpiece. So they're crapping in my masterpiece, you know, and you can't scoop it up out of the rock. You know, so I had to go in and steal one of my wife's tongs for chicken and stuff, you know, and I had to make sure that I didn't take it back into the house, you know, because I don't want her using that specific one. And then the grass started growing because I forgot to put plastic down. So I got dogs pooping in the masterpiece. I got grass growing. Every time I go out there, I want to commit suicide, you know. So finally, got the pool out of there, and I took all those rocks and dumped them in the hole, you know, and covered them up. And today I have a pretty nice yard, but it took forever, you know. A lot of these landscapers can do your yard probably in a couple weeks. I'm talking 4 or 5 years, you know. And you know, the thing about it is, all the trouble I went through, I put myself through that, you know. And I didn't drink. Because I found you don't have to drink over nothing. You can get through anything. You know, I've had family die. You know, my sister, her husband died. A year later, she died. A year later, her son died. And that was a whole family. You know, my mom died, and then a year later her husband died, you know, and people die, you know. It's not something we like to go through, but we go through it. And when I was drinking, I didn't go through anything. I wouldn't even answer the phone because I didn't know what to tell them. I didn't have any lies to tell them. You know, I didn't have any money. I didn't work. I wasn't working. And today, you know, I finally found, you know, something I like to do. I got involved with a guy named Mac at the Alano Club, and he was an artist, and he got me involved in doing art, and today I do Chinese brush painting. And I study Japanese calligraphy, and I've been doing that since 2006. And I've had 2 or 3 art shows down in LA, and you know, I found out that the problem with my wife, all I had to do was treat her like a newcomer. I found out that if I would treat her like the most important person in the world, we'd get along good. And I started doing that. And the only reason I came up with that is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me come up with good things in my life. I don't have to rely on this very often. I do, but I don't have to. Unfortunately, I do. But today I'm not. Today I haven't swung a nunchuck all day long, and for that I'm grateful. Thank you.